everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley.
And on today's episode, we're heading into the seedy underbelly of horror by ranking our top 10 essential exploitation films. Typically referring to niche genre films that financially exploit taboo, exploitation horror has spawned a multitude of subgenres, and we're covering our favorites today, so stay tuned. Okay, Dawn, okay. I know you were excited to go first.
I am not an exploitation horror watcher, so I'm going first because my list is very lame.
No.
And also, actually, I object to the idea of a top 10, or I couldn't get my mind around the idea of a top 10 exploitation films because I don't like exploitation films. So how can I rank the best 10? Because I hate them. Actually,
which is interesting. You were the two that were fighting for this list.
You ruined Dawn. She's not ranking either.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm not ranking them because I actually vacillated back and forth between thinking this is a bad exploitation film, therefore should it be higher in my rating, and this is a good exploitation film, so should that be? It's very confusing.
Welcome to the inside of my brain.
Actually.
I had problems with value when it came to this list.
So you don't like any form of exploitation horror?
Well, I like the ones on my list.
Okay.
But generally, no. And I'm not even, like, some people wouldn't consider these exploitation, probably. So I guess I approach this by trying to think about what exploitation horror actually mm-hmm. is. And I think it changes, and I think there are multiple different criteria. I guess I started with Psycho from 1960. Because that was a film that broke taboos. You mentioned that in your little intro. Janet Leigh is featured in her underwear numerous times, and there's a flushing toilet. Both of those were really going against taboos of the time. And also, the film and how it was marketed was purely about exploiting audiences' curiosity to get them in the movie theater to make money. So in multiple ways, this seems like an exploitation film. Then I'm just moving chronologically here, Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974. Mm-hmm. I think this has got to be like one of the first films that exploits like fear, destruction of the body, gratuitous violence, just absolute bleak nihilist violence. So I guess that's why I picked that. And both Psycho and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I like. Like, they're exploitative horror, but I like them.
Make a really good argument for Psycho.
Boy, I'm reevaluating it.
It really made me think.
Yeah. The next one I kind of hate, even though I know a lot of people like it, and that's I Spit on Your Grave from 1978.
I did enjoy that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've read a lot of convincing arguments as to why this is a good film, why it's a feminist film. But for me, it's an instance of something exploiting. It's an instance of a film exploiting something and then pretending to condemn it. Like the rape and the rape just went on for way too long. And then, you know, obviously Jennifer, I think her name is, gets to kill her rapist. And that's a good part. But it just, like, I felt so queasy throughout most of that film because it really did seem to be dwelling on the rape. It just, you just didn't have to. So, yeah, exploitative horror sometimes for me exploits things even when pretending to condemn them. So, and then I put Friday the 13th from 1980, which is another film that I like. This seems like it's an exploitation film in that it's kind of cashing in on the success of films like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Halloween. So it does seem to be purely like, let's just make money with this film. and all of the sequels are doing that. But I think Friday the 13th is just good in its own right, even though it is exploitation at the same time. Slumber Party Massacre made my list, which is exploiting breasts, women's bodies. But for me, unlike I Spit on Your Grave, actually, I think that the balance here is to women taking charge of things, including their bodies, and not allowing themselves to be exploited, unlike I Spit on Your Grave. And then I have, like, I've got four all lumped together in what I will call penis movies.
She's coining that.
Yes.
Which is, I think, I don't know, like, you can show women's bodies till the cows come home, but show a penis and a movie enters into a whole different terrain. I've got, like, four movies here, too good, too bad. The good penis movies, I think, are Teeth from 2008 and Hostel 2 from 2007, both of which make a point about how, like, sacred the penis is. And they show it, but they're saying it's not sacred. Like, and look, it is in art all the time. Like, you don't show it. And they use it to kind of make a point about female power. Now, the bad two films are Piranha
I knew it was
3D
coming.
And 3DD.
Where I'm just, all I'm hearing is they made the list.
I need pearls to clutch because I can't believe Double D.
We thought she'd be the one clutching pearls today, and I think we both did. But no, I'm just saying they made her list.
Okay.
It is a top list.
They're on my list, and I do. Well, that was what I had problems with the whole concept. Exploitive use of penises.
I mean, we can't argue with that.
No, you can't argue with that. You'll like it or you don't, but it's definitely exploiting them without making a point. Whereas Teeth and Hostel 2, they have, I think, very strong feminist points. And then my last film is Saw 6 from 2009. Exploitative because it's obviously exploiting the Saw franchise. And the entire franchise exploits blood and gore. But I really liked this one because I think it shows that exploitive horror can have, like, good social commentary.
Yeah.
This has always been one of my favorite of the Saw franchise because it takes on predatory lending practices and also the health insurance company. Because the person who's, like, subject to all the traps in this film is some health insurance executive who denied someone's claim and sentenced him to death. And so guess what happens to him? he is tortured and dies. So that's my list of exploitation films that kind of show what exploitation film is, and most of them are not bad.
You make really, really good arguments.
The Psycho argument is a really good argument.
Yeah. And there are films, too, really are, but I just didn't see it that way, because I had to broaden my definition in order to make this list.
It's hard, It's hard to know, like, what is an exploitation horror film?
So, when you guys first mentioned doing this list, I already have a hard time saying exploitative. So I was like, oh my gosh, I have to keep saying that over and over again. So I'm just going to go with exploitation film.
Absolutely.
It rolls off the tongue
a little bit
more easily. And I was like, I don't know if this is going
to
be my thing, you know? And so I really focused on defining it also, just like you did.
Yeah.
So I went super broad. So the definition I used is a film intended to attract an audience by means of its sensationalist or controversial content. Or as I have come to define it, sex, guns, gore, and cameos.
There you go.
Sex, guns, gore, and cameos.
It kind of does sum it up.
Yeah. But isn't that all horror movies? I mean, that your definition seems
very
like
good.
Some
very good.
Maybe.
But it is an interesting question, like, where is that line? Because what I was reading about exploitation, because I couldn't figure it out for the longest time, there's a lot of subgenres. And one of the subgenres is slasher films. So if a whole part of horror is exploitation, then how?
I focus just merely on sensationalist.
Okay.
So once I found that word sensationalist, I was like, ouch, I could do this list in my sleep. So here we go.
Bring it.
And you know what? I have to start at the bottom of my list with my only mild PG version of a film. It's barely even a horror film, but I was like, you know what? I just liked it. So I went with 1985 Once Bitten.
Okay.
Just Jim Carrey. Yeah, you know.
So why?
This is my softer side. So 400-year-old Countess is immortal, but she's required to drink the blood of a young male virgin 3 times by Halloween each year to keep her immortality. So I think that there's just plenty of these scenes of objectifying his body, too. So, you know, they're always strapping him to things and spreading his legs. So, again, if the roles were reversed, everybody would be like, oh, my goodness, you know. Huh. The Countess is super hot. And I just think that it kind of went it all in silliness. So that was the sensational angle. So I also just wanted to show that I'm not a complete and total perv.
Before, here we go.
Before leaping right into that.
Before I go. Through the rest.
I can't wait to see how much overlap we have, or if there's any.
So I'm probably not going to have heard of any of these films.
No, you've probably heard of them.
Okay. I don't know.
So then I have 1988 Cheerleader Camp, which marries my two pop culture loves, which is horror and cheerleading movies. I love cheerleading movies. And this was originally meant to be titled Bloody Pom Poms.
Oh, of course it was.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
But I just love cheerleading movies. Because, again, I think that a lot of cheerleader films are very campy.
And, how could they not be? Anyway,
exactly. And then
we
all know I like, yeah. Elevated cheering film.
Elevated cheerleaders as art. I think we just offended a lot of cheerleaders.
We did.
Sorry. It's a sport, y'all.
It is a sport. Yo, I'm saying it is. It's a legit sport. I could not do that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. None of us could do that.
I'd be stuck being the bass. I just really love it. It's kind of like Mean Girls and Bring It On dosed with Molly. Like high on some kind of drug, because it was just, it's just sex, bloody pom-poms, pervs, and death.
But what's...
That's pretty much the context of it.
And it's exploitative because...
So again, I'm going sensational. Okay. Yeah, I'm going sensational. Right. Loose definitions. Next, I went Psycho Beach Party.
Oh, 2000. I could kill myself for not having thought about that one.
So again, this comic gold based off of a play of the same name. And to give you some frame of reference, it was originally going to be titled Gidget Goes Psychotic.
So good.
And that lead character is very gidgety. And I said it evokes kind of, the film itself evokes like Frankie and Annette movies to me. Almost like Back
Absolutely.
To the Beach. Like, I loved Back to the Beach. And then everything goes wrong. And you do have cameo, well, not a cameo because she wasn't as well known back then, but you have Laura Ambrose, who's also in 6 Feet Under. So I really love her in that. But it's just kind of like this gidgety character. And you've got trans people and you've got slaughtering. It's a good
I hope
film.
It's a positive representation of trans people.
I like, I'm just going to insert crickets.
If we can make inhales audible, because we both just kind of went...
That might be pushing it a little.
It doesn't have positive representations of, like, I don't think anybody.
Anybody.
Yeah.
It's an equal opportunity offender.
Then I have 1988. So, again, a lot of my films fell into the 80s.
Oh, shocker.
Sorority Babes in Slime Bowl-a-rama.
I've never heard of that.
Really?
Really.
I think if you even just Google horror comedy or exploitation horror, some that this would probably come up.
It's going to be a new one.
I did Google exploitation horror, and it did not come up.
Really?
I've never heard
Maybe
of it
my
before.
Computer is just so adjusted to the stupid things that I Google. But it's a twisted version of The Monkey's Paw. This one has sorority girls spanking along with some weird claymation imp.
What is it with you and the claymation?
It is a peculiar... It looks like the piranha claymation thing, but with duck lips. I don't know. It looks like somebody just kind of pinched his lips. I don't know. As if to say, stop it now. Just stop it now. And it has a death scene in the film that I feel like Ryan Murphy probably... consciously replicated in Scream Queens. I love Scream Queens.
Yeah.
But someone's head goes right into the fryer. Oh. And I know that, you know, he talks about all his love of horror and horror comedies too. So I feel like that had to have been purposeful. And then I have another film. I think it's horror, but I'd say it's Reform School Girls.
Oh,
so okay. 1986. If you haven't seen it, then you never watched USA Up All Night. USA Up All Night.
Just with that title, I can tell that's exploitation horror.
Yes. So it is just a whole bunch of women in prison, and you've got kind of like this head honcho that kind of rules the prison, and it's played by Wendy O. Williams, who was the lead singer of the Plasmatics, a fantastic band. She was also an environmentalist and a philanthropist in her life, but still, she just kind of plays the big Betty on the block.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got this stereotypical warden who has buddied up with Wendy O. Williams' character, and they kind of run the prison from the inside. And they are just very terrible people. Like in one scene, I was telling Liz, the warden stomps on someone's kitten.
I don't like that.
Oh my God.
I know that I don't like.
That is.
Yeah. Nobody likes kittens dying.
I know, but I mean, if you're gonna, dying just triggers
you wanna
something
worse. You
want
to talk about
worse.
Taboo.
Yeah.
That is exploitation like that. Where yeah. animals are killed.
I mean, and like yeah. people are like, I don't think Wendy O. Williams ever puts on more than a bikini through the whole entire film.
Because when you're running a reform school, who
I mean,
does?
I mean agreed. Absolutely. This is how you refine people.
Yeah.
So
that may be a good definition of exploitative. So wearing a bikini or nothing in inappropriate situations.
Yes.
When you otherwise would not in real life. That's yeah. wear a bikini.
You should see some of her stage shows in the Plasmatics. So it translates very well to that role that she's in. I think she actually wears more in this movie than she does. Because sometimes she would just show up, smash TV screens, and wear whipped cream.
Was it the movie or a concert where she whipped out her tampon and threw it into the audience?
I feel like that was L7.
Okay. Why do I know
who
you
was
that?
Actually in
I
concert don't even recently understand. In Philadelphia area, y'all. What? So I'm just saying, you know. Then I go to Piranha 3DD.
Yeah.
So Liz was afraid that my whole entire list was going to end up being shark horror, which I probably could have done a whole list yeah. on that.
Shark exploitation.
3DD, we've spent a lot of time talking about it. I put it on there just because it did go all in with cameos and just blood everywhere and vaginas and breasts and penises. Oh my. Yeah. So that's enough said about that.
Oh, and it even had the gun. The leg
yeah.
gun.
When you have a leg
it
gun.
Has bring me my leg.
It does. Yeah. We've God. Now checked off the Holy Grail.
Ticks everything off.
Of course, I have the Shark and Saw Women's Prison Massacre because, I mean, you have former.
That's going to be on every list.
I
is,
think
you
so.
Have former adult stars in it. And so you have Tracy Lord in the film, and she's actually kind of like the moral authority.
Well, of course
throughout
she is.
The film. She is the law and order. She plays the sheriff or the detective who's trying to figure things out. You have scantily clad women with wet white t-shirts. Of every
just
ethnicity,
because.
Yes,
yes.
running around,
yeah, exactly.
shooting things, and it's, yeah, it's fantastic. Then I go, again, Jersey Shore shark attack, because that's just death scene after death scene after death scene.
Yeah.
It's stupid depictions of, you know, I mean, it even makes the Jersey Shore cast look normal. So it's stupid depictions of stereotypes that I think pushes it over. And then I have Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death. Because
that's been on other of your
yeah,
lists.
That has yeah. been on other ones. Because it's like this weird battle of the sexes. It's like, so you have Shannon Tweed, you have Bill Maher, Adrian Barbaro.
Oh, Adrian
yeah. Maud, yeah.
Yeah, in it.
Ooh, I didn't know she was in it.
Yeah, yeah.
She classes
it's
it
actually,
up.
It's actually yeah. a good film.
Yeah.
But I think that what pushes it over is just how much that they reference pop culture itself and make fun of culture, pop culture, other films, horror, the gender war. So I think that that's kind of the content that pushed it over. Because it's not overly bloody. It's not. And then I think I will probably have to call this one my number one, which is why I left it for last, is Megapython versus Gatoroid from 2011. So all I have to say, and I'll leave the curse words out of this, but F&A, man.
F&A.
You've got...
What's it called again?
It's Megapython versus Gatoroid. Is
have to watch.
And I think it's strictly because, first of all, you have stupid, stupid horror monsters. And you have fantastic cat fights consistently throughout this film between Tiffany and Debbie Gibson. And not only do Tiffany and Debbie Gibson smash cake all over each other, they reference each other's music in these clips. So at one point, like, Debbie Gibson looks over at Tiffany and she goes, I think we're alone now. done.
Suddenly
again,
you're
so
all on
everybody,
board.
Everybody's very, very busty. The kills are gratuitous. There's no rhyme or reason. I mean, nobody would watch this film if they weren't looking for sensational. And then, yeah, Google it. Watch the clips of Tiffany and Debbie Gibson. That's my holy grail, I think.
You really should have gone last because there's no way that I topped
I
Tiffany
know.
And Debbie Gibson.
I don't
there's
know how
no
I've
way.
Ever left that off of my list either before because I'm yeah. just so in love with the fight scenes between the two of them because part of the reason I love horror too is it's so much of my youth.
Yeah.
Of me just coming up and so were
this
those
This is from
girls.
2011.
Yeah.
You're not
I know,
young.
So I'm not all 80s. But I think that just like my childhood too was, you know, standing outside with my Walkman listening to Tiffany and Debbie Gibson, and then to throw them amidst Gatoroid. And
what is a Gatoroid?
It's just like a big gator. Like a big metal kind of gator.
Oh, and look, the full movie is available on YouTube.
I'm shocked.
It is.
Absolutely shocked.
17,000 views. People are watching.
And no, that's 15,000 of them. I was going to say, that's probably me watching it over and over and over.
Wow. I cannot top that. That much I can say.
You sound like you've seen it before.
I have.
You have seen it.
Okay? I'm one of those views. I don't know what led me down that dark path, but, you know, that happens on YouTube. You just go down that rabbit hole, and before you know it,
You know it, you're watching Megapython versus
Exactly. That's kind of how it happens. But, okay, so I'm actually shocked that neither one of you mentioned one of the films that's tied for my number one, because I thought that was a given, which is why I thought it would be okay that I would have a tie for a number one, because technically I might have 11 films here.
Okay.
Because...
And they're ranked.
Of course they're ranked. Because I love exploitation horror, and I like the sensationalism. I like your definition, because that actually applies to, I want to say, all but maybe two of the films on my list. But I went for completely lurid and, in most cases, B-movie. But there's also some Ozploitation as well as some sexploitation in here, too. Number 10 is Bloodsucking Freaks from 1976, which, if you haven't seen it, it's sort of like a bonkers fantasy island. So you have the one major character. Okay. It's called Master Sardou. And he's got a little person sidekick. And it's basically like a sadomasochist carnival situation. But you think you're just like watching a show, or that the viewers in the movie are just watching a show. But then you find out that you're actually watching people who've been kidnapped and forced into like sex slavery. Mm. And I know that sounds really dark. Because it is.
Because it is.
I know a lot of people have watched a Serbian film. I did think about adding that. But I would never watch that again. I wouldn't call it a favorite. Yeah. It's an important film, but it's not one that I enjoy. But there is a link between this movie and how we get to a Serbian film, I feel like.
The fact that this film is showing something real, I mean, obviously it's within a fictional framework, right? But they're pretending it's real.
Exactly.
I mean, that is one of the definitions of exploitation. It's very different from what you were talking about, I think. But it's like exploiting someone's real misery.
Yes. I think you're going to see that in a lot of my films.
This isn't the fun exploitation list. If you want that, go to quiet.
No, this is the flip side. This is the more serious, probably.
Pretty sure my pupils are dilated right now. I'm even talking about my list.
Endorpho horror.
Yes.
And hashtag then we have downer horror.
Although, my number 9 is sort of the exception to the rule. I went with Vampiros Lesbos from 1971. Mm-hmm. It is West German and a Spanish movie. Basically, a vampirist tries to kill a bunch of women because she needs their blood to survive. But it's super gay and super campy. And I love this movie. It's true, though. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's exploitation. I mean, obviously, you got breast and, the writhing around and the whole kit and caboodle. But I love this movie. I think it's hysterically funny.
it's good.
Some people are going to find it offensive.
I think I was just...
I do not.
I was also laughing at your delivery.
I think we could probably put the "some people will find this offensive" label on both your lists.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Cover all 10, 20 of them.
Number 8, though, is not one I would say is offensive. Well, okay. I mean, if you have delicate sensibilities, maybe. But it's Don't Go Into the House.
Or you're normal.
Yeah, well, that too. But Don't Go Into the House from 1979. And it's about a guy who stalks women with a flamethrower. And there's some amazing kills in this movie. If you want gratuitous violence, this is for you.
Okay.
But what's cool about this movie...
But that's not offensive at all.
No. Well, here's why it is the exception, is because it does give you a backstory where the mother, because it's always the mother, traumatized the son by scaring him with fire and, like, abusing him with fire. So he's got a whole traumatic backstory, which you know I love. And... So there's a reason. There's a method to his madness. But honestly, the reason to watch it is when he takes that flamethrower and he completely singes off the top part of this one woman's head. It's amazing.
That evokes some Vietnam stuff for me.
Ooh. Yeah, and I mean, that's the time period, too.
Yeah.
So
71?
It is 79.
Oh, 79.
So just enough time has passed to make some cultural critique, really. Number 7.
More social commentary.
Yeah, we're leaving the social commentary around now, and we're going to The Wizard of Gore from 1970. I love this movie, and it's about a TV talk show host who hypnotizes people to do just these horrible, horrible things.
Oh, wow.
And it plays with that line between fiction and reality, and that's what the whole movie's predicated on, but it is just one horribly offensive scenario after another. And if you enjoy that sort of thing,
yeah,
it's definitely one I would recommend.
This is also revealing your love for the 70s.
Oh, yeah. I love
lots of 70s horror. Yeah.
I mean, because that's exploitation time primarily. Yeah, yeah. And I really do enjoy these. The darker, the better for me. Number six is Spider Baby from 1967. And this is my one nod to horror comedy. And I don't know if people have seen this movie, but if you haven't, you really should. You've never seen it?
No.
Oh, my God. You have to. It's like a hick family that they have like the shared DNA. We won't go into how. But it's causing them to evolve backwards.
Oh.
And you have the trope of the law and order, but they're completely incompetent. I mean, it's a really funny movie, but it is completely exploitative, especially when it comes to disability. Number five, I went with Sleepaway Camp from 1983.
Yeah.
This is definitely the more traditional slasher film, and it's exploitation on a lot of levels, but I think people remember it because of the big reveal at the end that sort of, you know, we were talking about trans issues. That definitely is, there's a piece, I wish I had thought to write down the author and the title, but I'll link to it in the show notes, that talks about, from a queer perspective, why it's okay to like this movie.
Is it the one that Dawn...
Daniel Shepard?
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, that's a really good piece.
It is.
And I think it makes a good case about why it's okay to enjoy some of these as films. Obviously, real life is completely different. But yeah, I will link to that in the show notes because I think that's important. Number four. Okay, I will say, from here on out, these are the movies that I heartily recommend. Number four, Blood Feast from 1963. You have a caterer who's hunting down women because he wants to make an Egyptian goddess out of their body parts.
Oh.
And if that sounds delightful to you, it is. It really hones in on using female bodies in ways that are not appropriate in any sense of the word.
Frankenhookers.
It's very similar to Frankenhookers, only it probably has a little bit less actual sex. Or sexual innuendo, I probably should say.
Sex. Actual sex. As opposed sex. To...
No, I mean, it's definitely cut from the same cloth. Number three is a good movie. It's Mark of the Devil from 1970. And this is the one that I think Dawn might be interested in.
Yeah, I've heard of this.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. Because it is about a witch hunter who sees the Salem witch trials after a period as being like the farce that they are. It does take place in Austria, and there's an actual real story to this one, but it is very exploitative. You have nuns that are raped. You have this one scene where literally a guy's tongue just gets ripped out and you see it in all of its visceral glory. Okay, maybe you won't want to see this one. But this is a good one to read about because it's important. Yeah. I think it's a good movie, actually. It sort of ties into number two, which is The Devils from 1971, which is a British film.
Yeah.
Most notable because of Vanessa Redgrave. And she plays a hunchback, sexually repressed nun. And it's a dramatization of like a real life priest who was executed for witchcraft.
In France, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very, I mean, it goes all in on exploitation, but I think it's a really good movie. I will say that this one was rated X and banned like everywhere. Yeah. It's really hard to come by. I've been looking for like a good solid copy for a long time.
I think it was on Shudder very briefly.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was interesting that it wasn't on there very long. It is like, I still think like people don't want you watching this film.
Yeah, which I think is kind of amazing. I mean, 1971, you would think people would have chilled out, especially given some of the movies that we've had recently that are just really difficult. But my number one is a tie, and there are completely different ends of the spectrum. The first is one that I swore you guys were going to mention, and that's Freaks from 1932.
Yep.
I love this movie. Yeah, I think this is one of like the perfect horror films.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt about it. It's exploitation, especially when you realize that these are real people with real disability, and the way they're portrayed is not, it's not good, but the movie is good, especially for the time period. But my favorite, and this is probably where I reveal too much about myself, is actually one that people will probably push back on in terms of it being horror, but it is musical melodrama, and it is from 1970, and it's Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. I love this movie. I don't care what anyone says. for people who don't know what this is about, it is written by Roger Ebert. Yes, that Roger Ebert.
Really?
And you definitely need to look for Siskel's review of it, because all the years of grudges that he had for this man come out in this review in glorious fashion. But I love this movie. It is campy. It is ridiculous. It was meant to be the sequel to Valley of the Dolls, but it's not. It goes all in on sort of 1960s excess culture. You have shades of the Manson murders happening. You also see a very definitive precursor to Sleepaway Camp. So there's a lot of DNA that comes from this movie that you see in horror films down the line. So that's why I think it's relevant to be on this list. And honestly, it's a fun movie. And I can still remember being like 13 years old and watching it and like keeping the sound down low because I was like, am I watching porn? It's not porn. There's no porn happening in this movie, but it felt like it to like a 13-year-old.
If there was, it
might
have made my list.
There would have been more crossover. But my mind was just blown. And I was like, this is the best movie of all time.
I feel like, so your list was almost, the whole entire thing was 70s and then like two films from maybe the 60s
the
and one from.
60s.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, because when I think of exploitation, that's the time period that I think of.
Yours was
honestly
really well spread, though, Dawn.
Yeah,
I think yours went.
And not exploitation in the way that you guys was. So did you have anything beyond the 70s? I can't remember now.
I think my latest movie was 1983, Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's the latest.
It's my one nod to the 80s. Yeah, and that one I went back and forth with, but I felt like I needed to have.
And yours was mostly 80s.
Mostly
80s. Except for Piranha 3DD.
Yeah, and then my Gatoroid, my Debbie Gibson.
And
that's 2011. And Sharkansas.
Yeah.
Oh, and Jersey Shore Massacre.
Okay.
So she's of the times.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, I do love some of these films so much that, I keep repeating them.
So I'm curious what it is you love about exploitation horror and what you don't like about it.
It's exploitative.
It's fun.
No, I think for me, it was just that I broadened my definition for just the sensational. When I focused on sensational, that allowed me to bring in the gore and the camp.
But what do you get out of the gore and the camp?
I leave feeling high. Like, I literally leave feeling so excited.
Endorphin horror.
Same.
I think, again, you can't take emotion away from horror. You either go because you want to be terrified. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't go to horror films to be bored.
No.
You know? And I guess all these people these days, these elevated people, they want to think. But, like, I want to
not
feel.
Not us.
I like thinking.
I want to feel. I think that is the core of horror for me. And that kind of speaks to, like, especially, like, Noel Carroll. Like, you have to have a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his was focusing a little bit more on, you know, that repulsion.
Yeah.
As do so many other scholars. I think for me, though, it's just that overwhelming, gut-wrenching, like, wanting to leap out of my seat, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah, it's weird because I totally agree with you about horror, that it's about the feeling. But those kinds of exploitation movies, like watching Piranha 3D and 3DD, I honestly felt very little.
Really?
Like, I feel more, I was petrified watching The Blair Witch Project, for instance. Which I'm not sure anyone would call exploitation horror.
I think I don't get scared very much. I think for me, it's about... So this is where, you know, I refer to, like, your Stephen King. Like, you gotta feed the gators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just wanna, like, open up that little trap door and feed my gators and slaughter everything in sight. I just want... Get him! Yes! Oh, no, he didn't. I want that moment where I'm just like,
I'm sort of on the same page, a little bit different, though, because I like horror as a way to really sort of interrogate trauma. So the more extreme that you can be, I know, I use the trauma word. I'm
well,
sorry.
Well, you used it a lot.
So. We weren't going to mention
it.
But I agree. I do like it for that.
But I feel like you need that extremity, especially like as we shift culturally. Things that once read as extreme no longer do. And so you have to continually keep pushing that bar. And I would actually argue that we're in a time when the real horror narratives are not in horror films.
Yeah.
I think they're in fan fiction.
I don't read fan fiction, but I agree with you.
There's a whole really sort of weird thing happening in fan fiction that really goes all in on stuff like, especially like pedophilia, incest, things that you don't typically see in horror films.
Well, horror films have rules. I mean, as lots of characters in horror films say. And I think those rules do stop, you know, filmmakers of horror films getting into like pedophilia, for instance. And I would never want that line to be crossed.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't find that enjoyable in the slightest. It would be horrifying.
Right.
So, I mean, that's one of the things I like about horror, that it contains its frightening, and it works creatively to be frightening within certain boundaries.
And I think that's probably why I don't like films like a Serbian film, even though I appreciate like what the director's going for, because I do feel like it crosses some boundaries that really don't ultimately serve a purpose.
Yeah. Which I guess is the essence of exploitation, probably. That's why I've never watched that film.
Yeah.
Of course, my love came through when I was younger for horror, so it was just naughty to do.
Yeah.
But then I just hearing you guys talk about some of it too, is the fact of the matter is for 20 years I've worked with, you know, in human services, and so like I hear that stuff all day long, like in the real world.
Right.
So I think sometimes too, just having a release from that, where I can just go home, and horror comedy, that it's like a remedy for everything.
Yeah.
So I don't have to go home and think about, you know, what's really happened to those kids or whatever.
I can totally see that.
Absolutely.
For me, it's a different kind of release now that I'm older.
Yeah.
That makes total sense.
Well, on that note.
I know.
On that happy note. That is our very different lists on exploitation horror. I like that we all sort of came at it in a different way, which we tend to do for these lists. But if you haven't already, please follow us on all things Horror Homeroom on social media. And we will be back soon with another podcast on a to-be-determined topic. We will talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.